Well, look who's here. It's the news, according to me. Yeah, sorry. Manamana. Now, those of you who are my age will remember that from Sesame Street. But those of you who are not my age, I'm assuming you're younger, because there's not a whole lot of people older than me anymore. I've noticed. There's not as many old people in the world anymore, I've noticed. Everybody's younger now. It's just not as many old people. I'm not sure why that is. I'm not old, of course. It's just people who are older than me are old. And there's not as many of them, if you catch my drift there. And of course, they all are concerned. The older people that are older than me are really concerned about one thing. What's in my cup? At the moment, it is iced tea. Just because that's what's here. But I have heated up water. So later on, I may step away from the microphone. If I can do that. And fix myself a cup of maybe chai or something. I have the... I'm here at the main studios of the News According to Me studios. Behind the... It's not exactly a golden microphone. I would call it more of a pot metal tin microphone, probably. And of course, in the background, you can hear my dog scratching on the floor, trying to dig through carpeted cement to make it more comfortable, I guess. There's a reason they do that, you know. Dogs do that. They do this scratching thing, and they spin around. They'll turn around right before they lay down on the spot. That's an instinct they have. And what it does, it actually scatters bugs. Gets the bugs and any... it kind of loosens up the ground and loosens up the area where they're gonna lay down, so that it can be softer, as well as it gets rid of bugs that could be in that area. Anything else that they might happen to scrape. They actually, as they're scraping, they're smelling the dirt as well. They can smell things, because their sense of smell is 300 million times better than ours. Something like that. That's not an exact number, of course. Nothing I give you is an exact number. Always comes with a disclaimer. And while I'm talking about disclaimers, anything I say on this broadcast may or may not be correct. There you go. Disclaimer. There you go. That's your warning for those of you who are listening today. I have, it is, by the way, there wasn't a show yesterday, Tuesday. I was traveling all day and I had no opportunity. I got stuck at an airport, about 6 hours yesterday, let alone the driving I had to do. And henceforth, I just learned that term. Henceforth, I was not able to provide any random thoughts from me, the guy who the news is according to, in case you haven't figured that out. So there you go. That's my story at this moment in time. I think I may have gotten my internet issues straightened out, which, you know what that means? That means I can start doing, potentially start doing live broadcasts. And when I do upload a broadcast, initially, this is the best part about it, is initially, as I upload broadcasts, they will be uploaded much quicker, theoretically, if it actually works. The only problem is I got this new home internet thing, and I got one for the home as well as for the office. And unfortunately, the only problem with this thing is it works just like my other one, only apparently the coverage isn't as good. However, it's unlimited. They don't throttle the speeds other than usage bandwidth in the area. I mean, there's only so much bandwidth in an area. This particular carrier hasn't quite gotten up to speed. They are running after another company that's kind of the major company in the country, and I think they're going to give them a run for their money. I really do. I do believe it. Because they are going all out. I think that they're really putting out the effort to give this other big company a run for their money. And I think that they're going to. They're trying awfully hard. And it almost seems as if they've got their act together. Now, I don't know if that's the case or not, because I don't know what that looks like. I have no idea. I have no example in my own life. So I don't know. But the process was extremely easy to get this thing. And the price is reasonable. It's not ridiculous. As well as the gear that you get with the service seems to be fairly adequate. Now, at my home, I'm going to need to get an external antenna. I've already looked online at some options. And I think I'm going to get a couple of these antennas. I don't know if I'm going to need one here at the home studios. I haven't got the system hooked up yet here at the home studio. But you can get these external antennas that you have to... The best way to do it is to go inside and actually connect it up inside the router. And you have to be very careful with that because you don't own the router. The company owns the router. And if you destroy it, you owe them like $300 and some, according to... It's a $60 router, but they charge you $350 for this thing. And the router itself actually does have Ethernet. Well, it has two Ethernet plugs on it. It also has a Mode C area. USB-C plug on it, as well as a phone jack plug. So I don't know if the phone will actually work or not. I'll have to test that out as well. The phone jack plug might work because it does have a number assigned to it. But I don't know if you have to pay extra for phone service with this thing or if you can actually use the phone there. I'll have to try that out. But I'm pretty excited about it because this will mean that speeds will be anywhere from 40 to 100 MPS. And I currently have 150 MPS, but that only lasts for 15 gigs, which sometimes only gets me through about a day or two. And then it goes down to like 0.01 MPS. It's less than, it's almost as low as the mortality rate for COVID. It's not that low. Nothing's that low. But it's low. It's slow. So, henceforth, again, I use the term, I will be setting that up and using it and be able to get my things uploaded and downloaded much quicker, I think is the word. It's going to be now. And I should be able to have a live streaming broadcast as well at some point, so I can find a platform for that. I know Gab will do it for a fee eventually. So you have to see how that goes. I don't really want to pay for that. I don't like to pay for anything. I want stuff for free, much like this show. That's why I keep this show free. I like free stuff. That's why this show is free, because I like free stuff. And I want to give stuff to you for free. But I have to go out and find free stuff in order to make my free stuff work. Like food, shelter, internet. Yeah. So And you know what they say about free stuff. You get what you pay for. So there you go. Just have at it. So there's a lot of things going on here. So I didn't have a show yesterday at all. I had one show on Monday. And I plan on having two shows today. I should have two shows today. The second show will be later. And I will be using the home studio for that, which means I will be using the home internet to upload it. Well, so we'll find out what our speeds are like when I go to upload that thing. And I'll give you a full report on Thursday morning. Now, Thursday morning, I'm probably going to go to my boat. However, I'm going to do the show before I go to the boat. And I'm going to be just out on the boat Thursday. That's all I'm going to do. Well, I mean, stuff. I got other stuff to do, but... There's always other stuff, you know, the yard, the dogs, the cat. Seems like there's something else. I can't remember what it is. Oh, the wife. Yes. Got to talk to her. Other than that, There's nothing else. But the boat. That's some projects. But a boat really, I don't know if any of you have ever owned a boat or not. A boat, I always laugh when I see an advertisement for a boat. And it says, project boat. All you would have had to do was say boat. The project comes with it. For those of you who have owned a boat, you know. There's always a project on a boat. Always. And the more projects you do on the boat, the more things you discover that you need projects to do on the boat. And typically, if you're like me, you want to like to do your stuff yourself. That, you know, one thing leads to another, and before you know it, your one project turns into 12 because you screw something up. You drill a hole in the bottom of the boat accidentally. And the next thing you know, you got to plug a hole. And in the process of plugging the hole, besides all the water leaking in, that provides you with a multitude of things to do for the rest of your life. And then you're so upset by the time you go to sell the boat that you just give it away. That's the other thing. So the other side of this thing is when you go to buy a boat, you have something in mind that you want to buy. And you can't find a boat like that anywhere. The only boat you can find is one that's way overpriced. And you try to talk the guy into selling it to you, and he doesn't want to sell it. Or he won't take anything, but, he wants $3 million for it, and you offer him $299 million, and he won't take it. So, you end up paying the $300 million for the boat. And then you find out all the stuff that's wrong with the boat. And you understand, well, it's used. It's a used boat. What'd you expect for $300 million? So you get this boat. It's the happiest day of your life. You get this boat. You're thinking about all these things you're going to do on the boat. Out there in the glistening sun. Breeze flapping through if you have hair. I'm old. I don't have as much hair. I can't really feel the air moving through my hair anymore. I feel the hair in my nostrils and the hair in my ears. Other than that, I digress. So you're out there on the water, and you're thinking about all this wonderful time you're going to have on the water. So you start doing some shopping. You start getting all the trinkets, the cup holders, the seat cushions, all the stuff you need, life jacket, all the safety stuff. All that. The water skis, which don't work very well behind a sailboat, by the way. I've tried. You can do it. I have sailed behind a sailboat, I've skied behind a sailboat. It was a catamaran. A little cat, Hobie cat. And it does work. It's not much fun. And you can stop the boat. You can stop the boat if you try hard enough. So with your skis. You can't slalom. There's just not enough speed there to. I suppose you could on some of these new boats. I don't know if you've seen some of these the America's Cup stuff and stuff they're doing now with hydroplanes, hydrofoils. They're getting speeds averaging between 30 and 50 miles per hour on sailboats now. They are screaming across the water. They're breaking records all the time. Monohulls and even just the planing monohulls are doing extremely well. They're going up to 15 to 20 knots all the time. Amazing stuff. I'm happy to be cruising along at 5 knots. I can walk faster than that. So, I digress. Where was I at? So you get this boat, and you buy it. It's the happiest day of your life. And you start working on it. And you have struggles working on it. Every time you turn around, it's $1,000, which is what boat stands for. Break out another 1,000. Only I spell boat with two T's. B-O-A-T-T. Break out another 10,000. It's usually the way I see it. I didn't even pay that much for the boat. So, other than the $300 million taxes. So I had Anyway, so you have all these projects and you fix the boat up and you get it all the way you like it. Get it all, everything all done. And by the time you do it all, you realize you don't have any time to actually go out on the boat. Now, I see the boat maybe once a week. And I literally mean see it. I just go look and make sure it's not sunk. And then and then you don't ever use it. You're paying all this money to store it, keep it in the water on the dock. In the wintertime here, where I live, you got to pull it out in the winter. Don't have to, but it's, you know, no use keeping it in there. And, you know, all the other maintenance and taxes and fees and all other stuff. I figure, I'm guessing it costs me about $1,000 for every minute I spend on the boat. That's what I'm guessing right now because of how much I use it and how much it costs. So it's a precious thing. And you start wondering whether you really need this thing or not. You know, it's whether I really have this thing or not. And you go out there on it, it's like, oh, this is nice. But it's, it's not cheap. And so then you have this thing, and then you get it all fixed up the way you want it. By the point in time you get it all fixed up the way you want it, you're sick of it, and you want to just get rid of it. And you can't find anybody who wants to buy it. You couldn't find, you know, the previous guy who owned it wouldn't budge on the price. You can't hardly give the boat away because nobody wants it. This is typically the way it goes. And this brings me to the current state of our economy. The RV industry, including boats, has boomed over the last year, which was not expected by anyone. This caught everyone by surprise. Gas prices initially, when the COVID thing happened, were very low. In fact, they actually went down. We were in a glut. And for a few minutes, oil was actually negative per barrel. If you would have been on top of things and ready to go, you could have been paid for taking oil futures. And then turned around and made billions of dollars. It was worse than Bitcoin when that stuff came back. I mean, there are some people who there are millionaires today that were penniless before because they were, because of what happened there with oil initially. But the price, still the price of oil, gas, energy was still down. We were still energy independent at that time. And nobody could take their vacations. Nobody, you know, people have families. They want to go someplace. They want to do something when they're on vacation. They want to do something while they have time off from work. And guess what? You can't get a hotel, you can't travel, you can't fly because everything's shutting down and you don't know what you're going to get when you get there. You can't go to restaurants. You can't, you know, you're not sure if you're going to be able to deal with all the rules of, you know, some going to another state or going on an adventure. And it was a tough time to travel. Let me tell you. So I had purchased in 2020, actually 2019, the fall of 2019, I purchased a motorhome before all this stuff started happening. Got an old Class A diesel, rear engine diesel, smaller one. It was only a 37 footer. It's not a huge one. And it's large, but it's not the oversized, you know, monstrosity bus thing that a lot of guys people get now. Doesn't have any slide outs. Just a plain Jane, simple, old, good old motorhome, Spartan chassis. I used to work in the RV industry, and I used to actually work in an RV service center, so I was familiar with fixing them up. Nothing really scared me other than the chassis. I was concerned mostly that the tires were good, the brakes were good, and the thing ran right. I can fix up the rest of the stuff. The heater. In fact, I took the heaters to a guy that does appliances, and he just had him go through them. That way, they were done right. Then I find out he doesn't do wiring. He only checks out. So he ran there was something wrong with the one, and it just goes, well, it's not getting any power, but I don't do wiring. So he wouldn't wire it up to make it run. I had to do all that. It's ridiculous. But at least, again, he went through the whole thing, made sure everything was right. So it has two furnaces on it, and both of them work. It has two air conditioners. They work. I had the generator checked out at the local Onan spot up here, and it was working fine, but it's not. There's something still wrong with it. I think it's got too much oil in it. Actually, it's kind of weird deal. These generators, They like sense all kinds of parameters, and if you have too much oil in the thing, it will shut down. And I believe it's right at that point where it's just got a little bit too much. Either that or it could be overheating too. I have no idea. There's supposed to be a code thing on it, but this is one of those older analog ones that you have to actually plug into to get some kind of an answer. There's no way to find a code or anything. But I digress. Anyway, so everybody's buying up motorhomes and they're buying up boats because of this COVID thing. I think the value of my motorhome probably doubled last year. Because I went through the whole thing. I put in, you know, I did some upgrades to it. I did some new stuff, put new batteries in it. It's got a house battery set. And it's got a motor battery channel as well. It's got two chassis batteries, and it's got four house batteries, all new AGMs, for those of you who know what that is. I also put new tires on it. I got the air conditioners all running, air conditioners, heaters. Put in some new plumbing in the external areas. Well, what else did I do with that thing? Oh, I resealed the roof. Did a recoat on the roof. It's got a rubber roof on it. Did recoat all that. And, I did a lot of stuff to it. It's also got a little washer and dryer in it. It's like a little combo washer-dryer thing. I haven't used it, but it's there. Yeah, I just got it all fixed up, all ready to roll. And I kid you not, it's probably worth more than twice what I have in it. Which I did not expect that at all. I did not expect that to happen. I also had purchased the boat about a year before that. And now it's worth. And I did a lot to that. I put an autopilot in it. I did a whole bunch of stuff on that one. New water heater. I had the bottom of it glass bead blasted and put a barrier coat on it. Redid the bottom, all that stuff. Put SureStep on the deck, all that stuff. Coated it, refinished it with all that. And it's an older boat. It's an 84 sailboat, but it's, I put an awning on it, did some other stuff. Got a new front sail. It's not new, it's used, but it's better, you know. So anyway, I was, got all this stuff done. Now, that thing's probably now worth, more than twice. I mean, I got such a good deal on it to begin with. It was already worth more than when I bought it. It was worth more than when I paid for it. And then, you know, I did all this stuff to it and probably, again, now it's probably worth two or three times what I paid for it, actually. Close to three times what I paid for it, I bet, right now. Could probably sell it for. Problem is, if I sell it, then if I still want a boat, I have to go out and buy another boat that's going to be, you know, three times the price, probably. I don't know. Maybe I could find one for cheaper, fix it up again. So there you go. Now, the problem with this is, and this is the point I'm getting to. At some point, the gas prices are going to go up. Now, back in the 70s, if you remember, if those of you who remember the 70s, if you were coherent during those times, when the initial energy crisis happened under the Carter administration, when we were told there wasn't going to be any more fuel. Oh, we're all out of gas. We're running out of gas. There's no more oil. And of course, 50 years later, we have a glut. So, gas prices went up. The RV industry came to a screeching halt. They did not sell anything. And a lot of RV companies went out of business. And they laid off a lot of people. And it got really bad, really fast. Because guess what? RVs run on gas. Whether you got a truck to pull it with or whether the thing runs on its own, whether it's a motorhome. Either way, they are not extremely efficient on fuel. So right away, of course, the big RVs were kind of obsolete for a little while there. And boating as well. Boats were, you know, people didn't boat as much because that sucks up gas like crazy too. So it was expensive to do either one of those things. And needless to say, of course, my family, my dad owned a little marina on a little lake. I mean, we're talking little teeny little thing. and about 40 little slips for little boats. And we sold gas. And it was pretty much just a summer business. He still had to work full-time to make the thing work. It was kind of a hobby business, more or less. But he, it was a lot of fun, though. As a kid, I was, you know, I grew up around that. It was just a lot of fun. I had access to a boat, and I could go out on the lake, and I could do all kinds of stuff. All I had to do was pump gas all summer long. Didn't make any money at that. I just got free gas for the boat and for my car. So it wasn't really a job, but it was a job, but I didn't get paid, more or less. But it was a great way to, you know, to grow up as a kid. I had so much fun. I learned a lot. So we, so everything slowed down and stopped. And I have the feeling that if energy prices continue to skyrocket, and if Biden continues to do what he's doing right now with gas and oil, we are looking at another crunch time for the RV industry. And now you have this glut of RVs being built. Boats and RVs themselves. Now, they're having a hard time with the supply chain right now, getting plywood and those kinds of things, all the materials that they need to build them. But they still have orders out through the end of next year, 2022. Now, many of those orders will probably cancel. But my understanding is most dealerships have hardly any inventory at all. They just got bought up. So there's a struggle right now. Now, I just happened to notice the other day when I was going down the highway, about 20 miles from my home, there's like a bypass that runs within a mile of my house. I usually just jump on that thing, and it's like a four-lane road. I can go to Chicago. I can be on a four-lane highway the whole way to Chicago, like a mile from my house, and or I can go east, go all the way to Cleveland or Pittsburgh or anything, just be on a four-lane highway the whole way. And or Indianapolis, kind of in the middle of Detroit, Indianapolis. It's just amazing what that road does, being that close to my house. So I was, I was running along down the highway coming home. I was still 20, 25 miles away, and I started I looked over and I saw a transport truck, these pickup trucks, these guys that deliver motorhomes. Those trailers have to get to the dealership somehow. So the motorhomes, they drive them. I used to do that. And the trailers, the travel trailers, the RV trailers, they haul those. And usually it's a guy with a pickup truck who just, you know, spends all of his life in a pickup truck pulling those things around. And I noticed two of them going by in the opposite direction. And it kind of piqued my interest a little bit. So then within about 2 miles, I saw another one. And I started counting them. Now, I'm not talking miles that I'm driving. I'm talking about miles between each one of them. I mean, this was happening about every minute. And I'm driving, 60 miles an hour, which means I'm going about a mile a minute. And I'm seeing one about every minute. Or every 30 seconds, I should say. 30 seconds to a minute, I'm seeing another travel trailer that looks like a transporter. Now, keep in mind, for 20 miles, I probably saw at least 15 to 20 RVs. I probably missed a few because, I had to pay attention to the road. But there was at least 15 of them. Now, think about what that means. We're talking about, there's several factories in this area. This is kind of the mecca for where they're built. That means they're rolling off the line that fast. They're just, going, getting them delivered. At some point, that's going to end. COVID's going to be over. People are going to want to go back to going to Disneyland. flying someplace, because flying is picked up as well, by the way. The airports are packed. The flights are full. They are running at, the way I understand it, they're running at, I don't know what they're going to say now, but the flights themselves, in terms of loads, I don't care what they tell you, they're at 90%. At least. Because there have been a lot of full flights lately. And they've started the whole thing of, oh, we'll give you $2,000 if you'll take a voucher. That is happening again. You're hearing announcements doing that again. They're adding flights exponentially. So flying is coming back very quickly. Of course, now that means we're burning more gas as well, you know, in the airplanes, which is also going to drive the price up. You know, the more the consumption goes up now, the more the price is going to go up. Now, I guarantee you, this is what they're going to say to you. Well, the price of gas is going up because the economy is so good. That's what we were told during the Obama administration. When gas prices started going up, they said, well, that's a sign that the economy is good. These people are so self-centered and self-absorbed and self-something-ish, I guess. They don't realize that a family's personal economy, it has nothing to do with what they think is going on with the oil companies making money. Or with the government getting taxes. I'll tell you a little story. Several years ago, we had a mayor in the town where I have my business property here, where I have my office space. Which it brings up another thought that I'll get to in a minute. It's totally off the subject. But surprisingly, I'm going to put a pin in that. Usually I just go off on the subject. But I'm not going to this time. I have a modicum of discipline. I have a modicum of discipline. And here I go. Here I am now talking about modicums. I had this mayor in this town, and he was on public television, local public television, and he was being interviewed. And they were talking about the state of the economy. They had the mayor of a couple little towns. Like they had like three or four mayors there that they were talking to. And when he asked the mayor of the town I live in here, the town where my business is, I live outside of town actually. There's no mayor. I live in a county. I have county politics to deal with. I don't have to deal with any mayor or town board. So other than what my business here, which has been a pain in the butt. So I take that back. I digress. Anyway, so yes. So he's asked, how is your city doing? Oh, we're doing good. This was back in 2009, I believe, or the end of 2008, when the big crunch was happening. Businesses were shutting down, things were closing up, and things were, like, the economy was bad. Things were crashing. The bubble was bursting. Now, in this area, we didn't get hit very hard. We didn't have a major, strange housing market bubble here. People kind of lived within their means, and that I credit the realtors in this area, the brokers, for that happening. They would not overprice properties. They would work extra hard to see to it that sellers did not try to gouge on home prices. And it was very helpful because we were not in a position where there was a big bubble here. Homes were worth what they were worth. Now, having said that, we have this interesting mayor who decides that he is going to He's being asked about how is your town doing? Well, we're doing pretty good. And he goes on to explain how they're doing pretty good. And what he's talking about is the city. How the city government is doing. He doesn't talk about how the people are doing in his city, how the businesses are doing in his city. He just talks about how the local government is doing. As if anybody gives a rat's behind about that. Well, I lay awake at night. Can't hardly sleep because I'm concerned about whether or not the water department's going to be able to pay their bills this year, this month. That's not what people lay awake on their bed worrying about at night, buddy. Let me just tell you. And this is the egocentric mentality of, granted, this guy was a rabid leftist. That's probably helpful to fill in some blanks there. He could not see outside of how the city was doing. That's all he could see. That's all he cared about. And it struck me in that moment of watching that thing that it was so obvious that that's the mentality that they have. If the city is doing okay, if the city government is doing okay, then the town is doing okay. Doesn't matter that businesses are shutting down and buildings are being boarded up, as long as the city's doing okay. And he's doing a good job. And that's exactly what was happening. Businesses were shuttering, closing down, and he was just fine with that, as long as the city was doing okay. Unbelievable. So, I digress. Now, I was going to tell you about my building, the thing I stuck a pin in. I wanted to get back to this. I am considering doing something with my building here that I was looking at buying here a while back. There was just a few years ago. There was an old. It wasn't all that old. I mean, it was a fairly nice building. It had been there for years and years and years, but it was a nice building. And it was a television station that had closed down, moved out. I guess they didn't close down. They moved out. They built a brand new building somewhere else, and they moved out. Now, in the process of all that, they had left the towers and some of the things that were there, and they actually were still using one of the antennas for a remote transmission area. And which I don't know what that all means. It's some kind of a fee. They had all their, their dish antennas. They had like 10 dish antennas in the back, and they were doing all their stuff there. And somehow they were using that as a station. They had to have somebody there. I think it was 10 or 12 hours a day, and they had to have an engineer on staff. So they were that. But that's all they were using the building for. It wasn't being used for any kind of production or anything going on there. And they needed to keep using that for about a year. Well, they put the building up for sale, and they were going to be part of the stipulation was they had to use, you got paid basically a per month fee for using the tower, for the use of the tower. So it came with a ready income. Now, granted, that income would probably not even pay for the property taxes, believe it or not. Because the building was worth way more than what it sold for, but way, way more, like 10 times more than it sold for. And I almost purchased it. And my thinking was, because it was up for auction, and I was there that day, and I didn't have a checkbook with me, and I was kicking myself because it was ridiculous. It went for what it went for. It went for less than I paid for the place I'm in now. And it was like five times the size. So my vision of this place, because it was already set up for everything. Not only could I do audio recording, and it had sound booths for doing, you know, vocal work and voiceovers and all kinds of things. It had all this. It was already all kind of pretty much set up for doing video production. Obviously, it had a couple of studios. It had a little, you know, smaller studio. Everything was kind of wired for that. They had extremely good internet service there, available. Expensive, but it was good, very good internet. And my thinking was, I wanted to turn it into a business incubator for small businesses that needed office space and could, you know, kind of camp out there and use it as a home base for, you know, and different businesses could be in there, and they could use, you know, theoretically, if they all complement each other, they can actually help each other in their services. If one is a marketing company, they can help market things. If one is some kind of a service industry, they can help to, you know, clean the building. They can, I mean, it can be the kind of like this little, just kind of a community of businesses that kind of help each other pull themselves up and work with each other and build networking. Kind of a bartering system kind of type thing that can go on there. And it works very well if the businesses perform well together. They can really make it easier on each other when one company does printing or with something, and that somebody else needs printing, and they've got somebody right there in the office that does printing. So this was my plan. Now, on top of that, I wanted to do a YouTube creators studio or a social media creators type of studio where the, you know, people could pay a membership fee. Businesses, whoever it was, could have access to this production facility where they could come in and produce their own podcast. They could produce their own video, you know, their own YouTube channel. They could have little interviews. They could do whatever they wanted to, talk about their products, have a, you know, a weekly newsletter type thing on online. Pictures as well as video, mostly video, audio, whatever it would be. They could even create their own, you know, advertising, their own, their own radio commercials, and they just take them to the radio station. We weren't going to be a transmission spot for a radio, but just to be able to be creative like that, have creative types of people there, you know, maybe a company that does video production or does video editing, have some interns there that want to learn, you know, it's just all kinds of things that could be done there. And there was plenty of space to do all that, meeting rooms, you know, office space, studio rooms, this whole thing. And I'm thinking this would be an interesting way to make that facility work. I mean, the creative side of me was just, you know, exploding with ideas. Now, whether or not this is a big enough community that would have worked or not, I don't know. I think it would have, frankly. However, I never had that opportunity. It sold to somebody else, and they used it for something, and then it was, you know, somebody bought it, resold it. They bought it basically on spec. They just bought it to resell it. They made about three times their money on it, you know, within months, because they just turned right around and sold it. And then the person who bought that, then they were doing some kind of almost like a manufacturing business in there, which is kind of ridiculous. And then it's all office space. Somebody came in, a bigger company bought the whole thing, redid it, remodeled the whole thing, and gutted it. There's no more studio space and that kind of thing in there anymore. It's all nothing but office space. And it's good to see people there and working. It's you know, there's over 100 people there now that are employed there, which is awesome. That's awesome that it's being utilized for that. But the potential of what I saw there was much bigger. Now, what bothers me, and I guess what troubles me is, okay, so I had this big idea for that building. Well, I have a smaller building, but I have the same kind of facility. I have office space. I have other areas. I got kind of a workshop type area. I have a front end office that's got like a reception area. And I have four other offices besides that front office. Even have like a little kitchen diner type thing, like a little kitchenette. There's a bathroom, whole thing. Have a utility room, then I get the all, you know, storage, you got all kinds of space here. And there's really no reason why I couldn't provide that kind of service with the building I have now. And it got me thinking, you know, it's so many times, you know, and I've even counseled some people on this or tried to. They don't typically, people have a hard time thinking small. Now, I know that sounds ridiculous, but you need to think big, but you need to think baby steps. And even with regard to how, and I'll just go into this because I've got a few minutes left. I got maybe 10 minutes left in this broadcast, in this podcast, 10, 15 minutes. I promise I won't take much longer than 15 minutes here. It has been my observation in life that people don't do something because they don't think that they have everything it takes to make something work right out of the box and make it look like a big business. And quite honestly, most big businesses did not start off big. I know that sounds like a totally obvious observation. They call me Captain Obvious for a reason. However, people don't think that way. I've known many people throughout my days, my years, who've had ideas about starting a business. Now, I've also known a lot of people who've had ideas about a product or an invention that they have. And they always think about how they would do it. Well, I'm going to need $2 million to get this started. Really? Why don't you just do this first? Start with that. You've already got one of those. Why don't you do this and put that with this and at least start on a small scale and get some experience and maybe even develop some customers and start working your way up? No, because it really, you know, you really need that big, you know, you need that big investment initially, and then just, I just need somebody to loan me $1 million to make this work. Okay. Well, how much experience do you have doing this thing you want to do? I don't have any. I've never worked in that field before. I just know it's going to work. Okay, I'll guarantee you, if I had $100 million and you wanted to borrow $1 million of it, and I was just like looking for something to do with it, I wouldn't give you $1 million. Because you have no idea what you're doing. You have not proven anything. You've not proven one thing. I mean, for worse, first of all, you haven't proven you have any desire to make that happen. That's not really your passion because you're not doing it now. Your passion is to be a tycoon when making money with this business, and it's not the business itself that you have a passion for. I have invested in a really small company recently, and I am thoroughly excited about what these guys are going to do. Now, this is a company that literally does need millions of dollars to really make it go. However, they're making it go, and they don't have millions of dollars. And I am extremely excited for these guys because they are fleshing out their passion. They are finding creative ways to do what they need to get done to do some massively big things that are going to change this nation. I mean, it is going to change this nation. It has the potential to do so. The entertainment industry will not be the same. And these guys are on the front of it. They're starting to get some traction now. They're starting to get some notoriety, and they're starting to get some interviews with people that matter. And I totally believe in these guys in terms of what they're doing and their vision and the way they are walking it out. I'm excited to be a part of it. I'm honored to be a part of it. I wish I was the million-dollar investor that they needed. Because this is the deal. I had a guy that was fretting and kept asking for loans and kept asking if he was trying to get this one business started. He was just all about this. This business is going to work. I know it's going to. It was a restaurant. And he was all upset that he wasn't getting any money. Nobody would loan him any money. He kept applying, kept trying, got ripped off a few times trying to apply for some funds. And he just kept, you know, for a couple of years, several years, was going around and around with this thing. And what's sad is that business is sitting there empty. It's not doing anything. It needs to be brought back. And he's right. It's a business that's viable. Problem is, he knows nothing about the business of restaurateur, service business. He's never owned a restaurant. Never even, as far as I know, worked at a restaurant. I don't know if he's even bussed tables. I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe he has. But I don't think he has. And I'm sorry, but I wouldn't even, if I knew someone with the money, I wouldn't recommend it. I just don't know the track. I know there's just no track record. Now, I'm not saying that God can't do something with that. But what I will say is it, in my experience and in my observation, I have found that typically people who move forward with the passion that he's put in their heart to fulfill that vision, that dream, that, well, it's, he says he will give you the desires of your heart. In other words, he will place those desires in your heart. It's not that every desire you have is from him. It's that he will put desires in your heart, and he will not just put them there just to tease you. He's going to put them there because he wants to fulfill something through you. And how you respond, react, and, as I like to say, flesh out those things, put feet to them to actually do those things, is your response to that vision, that calling, that passion he's put in your heart. And if you're not moving in that direction now, who's to say that it's just going to drop on your lap and all of a sudden it's going to work? I'm not saying God can't do that. I mean, I was kind of blindsided by the particular business I'm in right now. I took it as a side gig that I was just trying to make some extra money so I could make money to buy something else to make something else work. Turns out the side gig is the gig. Everything else is a side thing. Everything else turned out to be hobbies. This is like this podcast. It's just a hobby. I love having the independence to be able to do it. But it snuck up on me. I did not expect it. I would never have expected this to be my career. And yet, here I am. Not the podcast itself. The podcast isn't my career. My business, it's the best fit for me. It's amazing. So it's just a weird thing. And I see in the nation right now this among many people, this idea that I have to get a franchise business, a turnkey operation where someone else has figured out all the little details and I just plunk the money down with a bank loan and I work the rest of my life to pay off the loan and maybe have something at the end when I get done. Maybe. Well, folks, debt is not always the way, you know, putting yourself into debt and then forcing yourself to work your way out is not the best, most pleasant way to do things. It works out for many people. It doesn't work for a lot of people. Probably more people that it doesn't work for. I guarantee you, going deeply into debt to start a business will not give you any kind of personal peace or freedom for many years. Initially, it all feels good, but then when it becomes work and it gets tough and you have a hard time paying the bills and the economy doesn't do what you think it's going to do, and then the taxes come and the payroll is still there, and these people that you know that have become your part of your family as they've been working for you for the last 5 years, all of a sudden, you can't afford to pay them. It is the kind of pressure and this and the kind of stress that is just not not something I can go through easily. Most people can't. So I would encourage you to find a way to fulfill your passion and do what you're doing, do what you're called to do, to take little steps in that direction as much as you can. Not to upset your life and upset the people around you, to make them suffer for what you want to do, but to do everything you can to continue to move in that direction, even if it's just little bitty steps. Because the doors will open. And along the way, you might find that it's not that that you're really supposed to be doing. It might be something else that you happen to step in with one of those little baby steps, or somebody that ends up walking next to you that you're like, oh, yeah, I'm going off. Or something else that just, you just never know where that's going to take you, but at least you're moving somewhere. Because if you're sitting down in a chair waiting for something to fall into your lap, I can almost guarantee you, 98% of you out there, 98.75% of you, that ain't gonna happen. And I'm not saying you should strive and try to force something into happening, because then you're gonna destroy yourself and everybody around you as well. So just think and ponder on these things for a moment. There you go. That's a moment right there. But I digress. I've talked enough, and I've talked about nothing, and yet I've talked about everything. I just have this eerie feeling that we're headed for a tough economy. Because I don't see the current administration benefiting us in any way. The policies that they're delivering, if they would have done nothing, not touched anything, the economy would be back and roaring right now. But now they what they've done is they've touched a whole bunch of things while it was all, you know, really down in the dumps, and they can claim, oh, look, it's come back. But it's not come near back to what it was or what it could be. And they're claiming they're building back better. We got to do more than build back better. We got to build back better. That's a direct quote from Joe Biden. Speaking of Joe Biden, I'm just going to end with this. If any of you happen to watch any of the G7 summit, I'm sorry. For those of you in other countries that are listening to Joe Biden, I'm also sorry. This afternoon's show, we're going to talk more about what's going on in Arizona as the findings are now they're being basically done with the audit some eerie things that happened in Pennsylvania, some creepy things that happened in Georgia, and I'm going to go on with some of that stuff and just talk about more of it about the election stuff later on. But in the meantime, God bless. Stay true to your passion that He's put in your heart. Have a great day, everybody. Talk to you later this afternoon. God bless.